Welcome. Today's message starts with Derek bringing to us the reading from 1 Samuel 17, verses 32 to 50, followed by Derek's message entitled All Ways. Let's now listen to Derek.
Is coming from 1 Samuel chapter 17, and it's a very popular story. You'll know the story well, and because it's a long story, I'm starting halfway through. But just as a background, it's a story of David and Goliath. So, and what's happened at this point is that David's brothers have been sent off to fight, and they're in their camp. And Goliath, the champion of the Philistines, the giant, he's yelling, he's calling them out. He'll fight me. Every morning he's coming out. Every morning the Israelite army go and hide. They don't want anything to do with this battle. They're running away. And David comes to bring food and supplies to his brothers, as was the way in those days when he fought in the army. You had to provide your own stuff. So David, young boy, not old enough to fight yet, brings food, and he comes upon this scene of this giant mocking the Israelite army, the army of God. And I'll pick it up when David starts to talk to King Saul at verse 32. David said to Saul, "Let no one lose heart on account of this Philistine. Your servant will go and fight him." Saul replied, "You are not able to go out against this Philistine and fight him. You are only a young man, and he has been a warrior from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant has been keeping his father's sheep. When a lion or a bear came and carried off a sheep from the flock, I went after it, struck it, and rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned on me, I seized it by its hair, struck it, and killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me from the hand of the Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and the Lord be with you." Then Saul dressed David in his own tunic. He put on a coat of armor on him and a bronze helmet on his head. David fastened on his sword over the tunic and tried walking around, because he was not used to them. "I cannot go in these," he said to Saul, "because I am not used to them." So he took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, chose five smooth stones from the stream, put them in a pouch on his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, approached the Philistine. Meanwhile, the Philistine, with his shield bearer in front of him, kept coming closer to David. He looked David over and saw that he was little more than a boy, glowing with health and handsome, and he despised him. He said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. "Come here," he said, "I'll give your flesh to the birds and the wild animals." David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcass of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all into our hands." As the Philistine moved closer to attack him, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet him. Reaching into his bag and taking out a stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. The stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. So David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone. Without a sword in his hand, he struck down the Philistine and killed him.
Good morning. Great Commission. Right, we've done all that. In week one, Tim spoke about being all in, asked us if we were committed to this cause. Week two, James spoke about all authority and spoke about Jesus having all authority and passing that authority onto us. Then in the week that we launched our OSIMS, our self-denial period, Tim spoke about all nations. And he reminded us that when we translate this passage properly, it's not just about a command to go out, but as we go out, in our daily life, in the things that we do. And also the remembering or the reminding that this nation, the nation that we live in, is a nation that needs to hear God's commands, that needs to hear and be made a disciple of. Jan spoke about all together. She spoke about unity, and she spoke about the Trinity and the special unity, the special unification that happens within the Trinity and us with each other and us with the Trinity. Then last week, Tim spoke about all commands and that the obeying of God's commands creates a foundation for which we can live life, a foundation that will get us through all sorts of storms. He told us that the storms come for both the wise and the fool in that story of the building the house on the rock or on the sand. The storm came for both men. The difference in obeying the commands was that one of them was able to get through it and one of them crumbled as a result. And today I'm going to talk about always. Mostly, I'm going to talk about time, always, but I want to talk a little bit about always as well. Now, when Tim asked me to do this particular sermon, I looked at this statement, and surely I'm with you always to the very end of the age. I looked at this statement and Tim said, Derek, will you preach on this statement? And I thought to myself, this looks pretty boring. This is a pretty straightforward sermon. There's no historical context. There's no event here to put into historical context to learn something. There's no parable to be reinterpreted. There's no contentious words to look up or try and figure out what they mean. I'm pretty sure when we look up the word always in the Greek, it translates as always. Like what do I say for the sermon? I stand up and say, God is with us always. There we go, sermon done. Like it's pretty straightforward, right? There's no mystery here. Except that King David, the person who tradition tells us wrote the Psalms, there was a period in time when theologians believe that David wrote all the Psalms. They're not quite sure about that now. But David, the psalmist, in these verses that I've put here and probably a whole stack more, has an issue with the fact that his God is with him all the time. If we go to Psalm 10, oh, where did it go? Gary? Disappeared on me, Gary. Is it back again?
Yes.
Hallelujah. That's all right. Psalm 10, verse 1. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Psalm 13. How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Psalm 22, which is a very famous line. My Lord, why have you forsaken me? Psalm 77. You get the idea, right? Now, to be fair, this is not the main theme of Psalms. David and the psalmist spent more time honouring God for being with them than this. But still, this great man has these times where he's like, why have you forsaken me? Why do you hide your face from me? Now, what really is amazing about this for me, what really made me stop and think about this, was the history of David. Okay, yeah, this is King David writing. This is a guy sitting in a palace. He's conquered, great warrior. But it's also the same David who we read about before. The little boy who, with nothing more than a sling and a faith in God, brought down the giant Goliath. So the question for me is, how does David go from being this little boy who is willing to take on a giant with nothing more than a slingshot, go to becoming a king who feels that God is hiding his face from him? What happens in this for David? There's a couple of things that interest me about the David story that I want to highlight before I get to that big question. The first one is David, little boy, and tradition tells us a scrawny little boy, he tries to wear the armor, or he doesn't try, the king tries to give him his armor. The king says, here, you're going into battle, you will need my armor. And so the king, who Samuel tells us is a man who was head and shoulders above every other man in Israel, this big king, gives this little boy his armor to put on. Now that's going to end badly, right? There's no good outcome here. So David puts on the armor. He tries to walk around in it. It's too uncomfortable. He says, no, this is no good. This isn't going to work. So he takes the armor off to go and fight Goliath. Now it's easy to go, David's being a bit irresponsible here, going before Goliath without armor. Is this a little bit like saying, no, I won't wear the seatbelt because I don't want to? But it's not. When we look at it, David says, you know what? I trust God in this situation. If I try too hard, God has got my back here. God's going to protect me. I fought lions, I fought bears, and I've never used armor before. Why would I try and do something different now? I need to do what I've always done, which is trust God and the skills that he's given me. So he doesn't overthink the situation. He gets dressed in his shepherd uniform, which is what he's used to fighting in, and he goes and takes on Goliath. The second thing which has always interested me, I've always been, what's going on here, is the whole 5 stone thing. I don't know if you remember in that text it says that David took 5 stones with him. Now, theologians have spent a lot of time trying to figure out what the 5 stones mean. Is it because of the amount of brothers? Is it this or is it that? What's the thing? And you know what? People who study the Bible, they tend to do what English teachers do a lot. I don't know about your English teacher when you were at school, but my English teacher, definitely my English professors at university when I was studying English there, every time they read a poem or a book, it means something else. Do you remember that? Is that what it was like for you at school? Maybe it was a bit different. I don't know. But you'll be reading a poem about a horse riding across a paddock, and the English teacher is, what does the horse really represent? Sometimes it was just a horse, right? And so I think theologians do similar things. There's a number here. There's a number. He picked up 5 stones. What does the 5 mean? And then they start putting all sorts of things in place about what the 5 means. I think, and it's just what I think it's just very, very simply the fact that David was being sensible. David knew that the sling that he was going to use is a very, very difficult weapon to use. In the right hands, very dangerous. And David was obviously the right hands. But that sling, something, you know, you're swinging around like here and you let go of one end and you've got to hope that that rock hits where you want it to hit. Now, trained, very effective, but always quite inaccurate. So I think David just knew that there was a possibility he might miss with the first one. So he bent down and picked up 5 and took them with him. Now, is this him not trusting God? No, I don't think so. I think this is him going, God has given me a set of skills, God has given me some experiences, God has given me some knowledge, and I'm going to use those things. I'm not going to put my God to the test. I'm going to use the things that he has given me, the knowledge that I have, to fight this giant. So he picks up the 5 stones, he goes, now, we know, because we've read the end of the story, that the first rock hits its mark and Goliath dies. Just hypothesizing here, just putting it out, no research, no study. Don't come hammering me if you think I'm wrong. Come and chat to me, but it's okay. I think God knew that if David missed with the first one, it was going to be all over. See, now, this time, he wasn't fighting a lion or a bear. He wasn't fighting a wild beast. He was fighting a seasoned, experienced, skilled warrior. David was going to get one shot at this. I'm pretty sure that had he missed with the first one, he wasn't going to get a second shot. David was just a little boy who was used to fighting lions and bears. He didn't know that, so he took 5 with him. He prepared himself. And God went, I know better. I'm glad you prepared yourself. That's good. I'm on your side, but I'm going to make the first one hit its mark. That's how I think the story plays out. Happy to talk to you about that later if you want to disagree with me. But I think that's why David took the five. And I think this balances the armor story. I think the armor story and the five stone story, these two details in the sermon, because they're quite interesting details to put in, right? They're very specific details. Now, when historians or fiction writers in like put in something that's something like five stones, there is actually something in it. Otherwise, why put in the five stones? It's wasted words otherwise. And these two details, they balance each other out. One of them is saying, don't overthink the situation. Don't do what you don't normally do. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're not trusting me. Trust me, trust God. And then the five stones balances that off with, but also use your knowledge, also use your skills, also use the experiences that you have and that I've given you, and don't just put me to the test. I think that's how those two things work. But the real question is, how did David go from being a shepherd boy defeating giants with a sling and faith to a king feeling isolated by his God? And I think it has something to do with what Tim spoke about last week. When Tim spoke to us about how commands, following God's commands, create a foundation for us to see through the storm. And if we read the David story further, we see that he was a man who had some issues and got himself into some trouble. He follows lust into adultery, into murder. He stands on his palace and he sees his neighbor's wife and he thinks, oh, I want that. And he takes her, and then he puts in a series of events in place to ensure that her husband dies in battle. He deliberately sets up battles. He deliberately puts him in the most dangerous places so that he could be out of the way. And he doesn't have to face that shame. Now, I'm not saying that because David sinned in this way, that he was distant from God. I'm saying because he sinned in this way, he felt distant from God. I'm saying because he felt he sinned in this way, because he turned his back on God, he couldn't see God there with him. God was there. God hadn't turned his back on him. It was David that had turned his back on God and therefore felt alone and had to deal with things. And in Psalm 10, which is one of the psalms that I read before, that's the one that said... let me remember so I make sure I don't say the wrong one. Why, Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? This is David in Psalm 10 saying this. And in Psalm 10, verse 4, he comes to the realization that in his pride, the wicked man does not seek him. In all his thoughts, there is no room for God. He realizes, 3 verses after saying, why do you stand off from me, that it's him. It's that he has turned. He's not thinking about God. He's thinking about other things. And because he has turned himself from God, he feels distant from God. Jan said a couple of weeks ago that sometimes we go through storms because we follow God's command, Jesus' commands. Jesus said to the disciples, get in the boat. They got in the boat, and when they got in the boat, they faced the storm. Sometimes we think because we get ourselves in a storm, because we come up against a giant, because we find ourselves in battles, we think that maybe we've stepped outside of God's will. Tim said last week that battles come, storms come. The difference is not our disobedience from God doesn't make storms come. Our turning our back on God doesn't make storms come. They come anyway. They're there whether we're in God's will or we're out of God's will. When we distance ourselves from God, we feel that we are distant from God. But that's us, not Him. And sometimes We can say there's a storm in my life, like David does in Psalm 10. There's a storm in my life. Why has God turned his back on me? The fact that we go through storms is not proof that that God is not with us. The fact that we make it through them is proof that he is, whether we acknowledge him or not. Whether we acknowledge that God is with us or not, he gets us through our storms. This week, on Wednesday, a storm came my way in my work. I was about to start a staff meeting, and a teacher walked into my staff meeting and said, "Derek, there's an incident at the front of the school. They need you." And so I thought to myself, how bad can this accident be? And as I walked through the school grounds thinking to myself, you know, that what's probably happened, because this is not unusual in a school car park. Someone opens a door on somebody else's car, or someone backs into somebody's car, or some kid knocks the mirror of a car, and then two mothers get out and start yelling at each other, or a father gets out and starts yelling at. And then that's when they call for Derek, right? That's, you know, come. There's a couple of big Samoan guys at the front of the school trying to punch each other. Can you come and sort it out? So I'm walking through thinking that this is what I'm going to. But as I walk through the school, as I get to the car park, I see groups of children crying and hugging each other. I see teachers hugging children, and parents hugging each other. And I think to myself, this is not a normal day. There's something else going on here. And I turn the corner around the building, and I'm not prepared for what I see. I see two cars hanging out the back of my principal's office and children lying underneath these cars. The upshot was 7 children in hospital, 2 who will never walk properly again, 2 parents with injuries, about 15 or 16 kids with minor injuries, no need to go to hospital. In the car park, we had 8 ambulance, 2 fire trucks, 3 police cars. We then had, on top of that, obviously, this is 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's time for the kids to be going home. There are 520 kids on site. We've got parents coming in. They're seeing a disaster zone as they drive in. They don't know what to do. They don't know what's going on. And so the fact that this storm came our way this week is not proof that God is not with us. The fact that we got through it is proof that he was. And when we sit back and we look, I tell you this story, and I can tell you, if I described some of the leg injuries that the children who are still in hospital suffered, they're horrific. I wouldn't describe them in a public place. And the burns from the radiator fluid dripping on children. But when I look at this situation, if not for a well-placed car, if not for a well-placed metal bench, if not for the fact it was raining and the children were about 2 meters behind where they would have been on a sunny day, if not for the fact that it was a Wednesday afternoon and about 70 of our children weren't on site that day that should have been, we have a situation which could have been much, much, much worse. If we turn our eyes upon Jesus, we can look at that situation and we can see the hand of God. We don't have to see the giant. We don't have to see the battle. We see the hand of God protecting us as a school, as an organization, protecting us as individuals. Our principal, the car went through into the principal's wall, hit the principal's wall. He was running a meeting with 2 of the senior staff. And he was sitting on his chair against the wall that the car went through. He was leaning on the wall that the car came through. And he doesn't know why now. He said he had a very good reason at the time, but he can't remember what it is. He stood up and took a step away from the wall. And as he took a step away from the wall came and hit him from behind. And the chair came under his legs and sat him back down again. Now, for the prompting to stand up, something as simple as that. Now, I have atheist friends and he'll go, oh, coincidence, or, you know, whatever, some other explanation, right? But those same people see those injuries as being the end of it as well. They can't see the hand of God in the whole thing and take joy out of the fact that God was in that place. I'm sad about what happened. I still really haven't fully processed what I saw and what I had to deal with the next day. The counselling that had to be organised, the fact that we had upset children and upset parents, the dealing with the media and the misinformation that came. We're going to be dealing with that for a little bit longer yet. But this storm is not evidence that God is not with me personally, my principal, our school as an organisation. It's proof. The fact that we're going to get through it is proof that he is. Do you believe that God is with you always, in all ways? There's two questions that I have for you today. This one, do you believe that God is with you always? I'm not saying, have you read it? Have you been told it? Do you accept it as a truth? I'm saying, do you believe it? Do you really believe it? When you look back at the giants that you've fought, when you look back at the storms that you have been through, can you see the hand of God in them? If you can't, that's the business that you have to do this morning. If you still question whether God was in all of those places, in all of those times, in all of those ways, then that's the business that you need to do with your God this morning. Because it's his promise to you. If you do believe, if you say, yep, fully, I look back on my life and I go, yep, God's hand was in all of those times, the desert times and the palace times. God was with me through all of them. Then I have another question for you. Do you live like you believe God is with you always? So if you're telling me that you believe that God is with you always and you've done that business, how does that affect the way you live? Is your life markedly different from the people around you who don't believe that the God of the universe is on their side and with them through every storm and every battle? And there are two sides to this. The first one, do you live with a boldness that leads to an abundant life? Do you live your life in such a way that goes, you know what? The creator of the universe has my back on this. I can be bold in this situation. I don't need that armor that doesn't fit me. I don't need those protections that are not good for me. I can be bold with the things I do. I can step out in faith. I can take on giants with nothing more than a slingshot and some faith. Or do you run and hide? Are things too scary for you? Do you find yourself backing away from opportunities that are God-given? Or do you live with boldness? Do you confront the world with the confidence that comes from knowing that God is on your side? Then there's a flip side to this, because God is not just our advocate. And some people don't like to talk about these things, but guess what? He's also our judge. He's also the confronter of the things in our lives. Do you live with the humility that honours the standards set for you by him? Do you balance that boldness with the humility that says the standards, the author of the standards that you are set to live by, is watching you all the time? He's with you all the time. Not with some big stick to beat you over the head. That's not what I'm trying to say. Don't misinterpret me here. But the person, the God who laid down the law for you, the commander, the author of the commands that Tim talked about last week, is with you always. I think about, the radars, the speed radars and the speed cameras out on the highway. And most mornings I pass two or three of them on my way to work. And you're driving along and people coming the other way flash their lights to see that there's a speed camera or a radar up ahead. And everybody all of a sudden starts driving slower. Those speed cameras, those radars, and I get caught in them a fair bit because my head's off in other places, they shouldn't be the thing which slows us down. We should be slowing down because it's the right thing to do. Right? And then people get all upset that they're out there. I don't mind that they're out there. If you're doing what's right, they're not a problem, right? People change the way they live if they think the policeman is with them all the time. Now, I'm not saying Jesus is the same authority as a policeman, but he is part of the Trinity which will judge us in our final days. Now, this doesn't have to be something which we go, oh, I better do the right thing all the time. No, because he is our judge and our advocate, he guides us through that. He helps us. When we are tempted, when we have the opportunity to do something that we know is not of God, we also have the opportunity to step up and be better than that with the assistance of God. And so I want you to do some thinking this morning about your belief in these areas, about this topic. Do you live like you believe God is with you always? Do you balance your boldness and your humility? Do you shun the armor that you don't need to put on, but still pick up the 5 stones? I want you to do some business with your God as we start to sing this next song. I want you to ask yourself those 2 questions. Do you really believe that your God is with you always, in all ways, at all times? And if you do, do you live in a way which provides proof of that, which honors that? Do you have battles at the moment? Are you facing storms at the moment in which you're struggling to see the hand of God? That's okay. Storms come. They come upon us all. It's no shame. It's no admittance of weakness or defeat to say I'm in the midst of a storm right now. In fact, one of the things I tell my children regularly is that it's more likely a sign of defeat and weakness to not admit when you're in a storm, to pretend you're not when you are. When the storms come, face them, acknowledge them. But know that you don't do it alone. Know that your God is with you always, through all battles.
Thank you for listening today. If we'd like to know more, our services are on Sunday morning at Caloundra Salvation Army, 119 Sugarbag Road, Little Mountain, at 10 o'clock.